for Saturday, May 19th, 2018. You are listening to the PW Torch Livecast, a.k.a. When It's Saturday's The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. I am, of course, Rich Fan. I am calling you live, or talking to you live, from Tampa International Airport, where I'm returning from a nice family vacation, and kind enough to join me this week is PW Torch contributor Zach Hador, who has, you've heard his voice on many other things and many other times, but this time he's here to talk about the art and artistry of wrestling, follow-up to our conversation a few weeks ago with Ennis and Isaiah Santiero. Zach, how are you doing today?
I am doing great, Rich. Thanks so much for having me.
Awesome. Well, the first thing I want to do is have you tell folks what you do at the Torch, what you do in general, and what made you think about the idea of art and artistry in wrestling, and how, for me, it was perfect timing because Isaiah had said the same thing. So I was like, oh, both of you, this is wonderful.
Yeah, no. So as far as the Torch stuff goes, everybody can check out my my Raw report alongside Wade's every Monday night. So just like him, I'm giving the alternative perspective to the show. So running down the segments and providing some analysis on each. And again, that is live every Monday as Raw's on the air. You can also check out my 205 Live report. I'm the Torch beat guy for that show. My report usually drops probably anywhere from like 25 to 30 minutes after 205 Live is in the can. And then related to today's show, my Artistry of Wrestling column drops every weekend. And that's sort of a look at a current event, whether it's a promo or a match or some kind of happening in the world of wrestling from the artistic side of it. So not so much decisions on booking or who should win or where they're going storyline-wise. It's more of a dive and analysis of the art around these segments. You know, what makes a guy, you know, look a certain way when he's cutting a promo, or the work of, you know, Braun Strowman waiting the hot tag in the tag team match. So it's more focused on the actual art itself than the stuff revolving around it. And that drops every weekend, either Saturday or Sunday, depending on when it can get up. So that's me. You can check everything out there at pwtorch.com.
Excellent. So with that in mind, I want to start with something that's kind of like out of the woods and more of a philosophical question. This week, we've heard a lot of reports about the upcoming USA Network offer for Raw and what it means both financially for the WWE, but also potentially what it could mean for SmackDown and some of the other properties. So my first question for you, Zach, is as someone who can look at the artistry in wrestling, how do we going forward, because I know Bruce Mitchell, Wade, myself, and others on the site have mentioned this, the idea of the WWE becoming content providers. How do you gel the idea of being content providers with having as many well-trained, well-talented artists within their company? And then on the up and come, because I'm here in Florida, I think about, I'm looking at an eye to Orlando and their crew with NXT and how they're learning new techniques and they're doing things maybe a little old school, but bringing a new school flair. So how do you marry all that with a multi-billion dollar company?
Well,
can you do Starbucks and still have a good artist of a barista, I guess?
Here's the thing. I definitely think you can have that. It's just, it's going to take some attention. It's going to take some coordination and a concentrated effort on getting the product that way. Like, you know, I thought Bruce and you guys these past couple of weeks have done just an incredible job of analyzing, you know, the business side of this. And it seems right now, as you guys pointed out, that there isn't necessarily a focused attention on that art, which is why you see, you know, Roman Reigns in the positions that he's in, for example, where he's getting booed out of the building, cast as a babyface, but and nothing really tying up and wrapping together nicely with a bow on top of it for fans. And to me, it's just an kind of an oversight. And at this point in time, it's like their focus is on other things. Now, once everything gets ironed out as far as the TV deal and where Raw is going, where SmackDown is going, are they selling the company, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I do think, I mean, look, WWE has the biggest stage possible. They have the most fans of any, you know, wrestling company in the world. They have the best production. They have all the right devices for proper storytelling and proper art in this business. They just need to be focused on it. So if and when we can put kind of this business era behind us, I think with the talent that they have, the resources that they have, they're primed and ready to go to do this the right way, if and when they choose to.
Now, do you think with this incoming flush of money, because the way I looked at it when I talked with Travis about this on the East Coast Cast on Wednesday was, whatever money Raw makes, SmackDown's going to be the rainy day fund. So even if down the road, 5, 10, 15 years, whatever the contract's done, they have to take a pay cut or they have to lose some money. They've made so much more that you'd be a fool unless you had, you know, basically the person that shows up in all those Discovery Channel, you know, how I lost the Powerball, you know, that sort of situation. So with all that money, anything SmackDown makes, you can make that your essential. I called it the NXT slush fund. So you can supplement having a Ricochet down there longer than you really need to have them. You can supplement having a bloated roster and not having to fire people because maybe you think there's a person that's a good hand that you just want to have around just for, like you said, the artistry, having a very good match for a match's sake. When you look at a group like the Young Bucks and Cody, they have this all in event, which has been purported to be, you know, like the anti-WWE event, so kind of like the indie show for a rock group that, you know, their version of Live Aid or something like that to counteract, or Woodstock to counteract a big corporate hegemon making an event happen. So 10,000 tickets sell in like 30 minutes or less. How do you see All In as it pertains to the artistry in wrestling? Do you think of it as good for them? Is it something that could be sustained? What do you see it as something that's a start of a movement or just a flash in the pan, or what do you think?
I definitely don't think it's a flash in the pan. To me, when I saw, you know, the results of ticket sales and even with the other events of that weekend, StarCast, et cetera, to me, what that tells me is there's a market for that side of the business, and a big one, a market where people are interested in pro wrestling for pro wrestling. They want that. They want the art that comes with it. They want the great matches. They want the great stories. Like, there is a market for that. And compared to what WWE is doing right now, which is just, let's just put as much as content as possible. Who cares if it's buttoned up? Who cares if it's, you know, if we're casting people the right way? Who cares what the reactions are? But if we can get, you know, a million people to watch a pay-per-view and it lasts 6 hours and nobody's happy, well, so what, you know? Like, I think there's a market for the other side of that coin, and that's what All In tells me, that there are still people out there that want to consume pro wrestling for what it is, for the art that it is. And that's my biggest takeaway. And I think now, you know, with social media and the fact that you can watch a wrestling show from London, England, or Australia, or Chicago. I mean, the world is so connected now that there's, you know, there's more and more avenues where those people can satisfy that urge and satisfy that want. And All In just is kind of just a microcosm of that. It represents that notion to me.
Awesome. And kind of because they all come from different groups, you mentioned like UK, you mentioned Australia. For you, where do you find the most enjoyment watching a match just for the artistry within it? Is there a specific promotion that you would recommend, a match you might recommend? What's currently catching your eye?
Well, for me, what's currently catching my eye is I've really and I'm new to the New Japan product. Not new in the sense of like 6 weeks ago, but new in the sense of like 2-3 years. And so being able to watch that product now and, you know, utilize their streaming service, I've really come to appreciate what that product is. I mean, the in-ring action and the matches can be absolutely brutal, but at the same time, it's a beautiful piece of work. I mean, they tell some tremendous stories in that ring. All of Okada's title matches, I just am drawn to like a moth to a flame, because there's just something about that guy. When he steps in a ring, it means, you know, big time. It means big time, and he's got a track record of really great matches with a variety of opponents. So I've really enjoyed watching his title reign and going back and watching, you know, past matches with him in it. I personally have to say, in regards to Cody, I think there's a valid criticism that his matches aren't necessarily on par with the likes of, you know, Okada or Omega. But that guy, from a character perspective right now, is one of my favorites in the business. He's just at another level in terms of tapping in to what he wants to be as a performer and what he wants his character to be. And he, and pun definitely intended here, but he is all in on that. Whether it's social media, whether it's in the crowd, whether it's in the ring, like he's put himself into his brand and into his product. And from somebody who likes consuming wrestling that way, you know, I want to watch a guy who's as invested as Cody is. So, yeah, I realize he's not having 5-star matches every single week, but that's not necessarily all that wrestling is about. And I really enjoyed his character, his development, and his passion within that character lately.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I'm Wade Keller, and I urge you to be sure that you're also subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. All you have to do is search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use on your Apple or Android device to subscribe to both feeds. There's a red brand covering Raw and SmackDown every Monday night and Tuesday night, and it's downloadable a couple hours after the show. And then there's also the Wade Keller Podcast Flagship Edition on Thursdays with a rotation of co-hosts, including Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and others. And then there's our Interview Friday edition. Every Friday, I'm joined by a guest who has worked in the wrestling business, including ex-WWE creative team members like Kevin Eck talking about Drew McIntyre.
Drew was a young guy, and did it go to his head, and did he walk around like he was the chosen one? He did, and I was frank with him, and I said, Drew, just so you know, this is how they view you.
And Podcast One's own Christian Harloff talking about his days working for WWE and Vince McMahon specifically.
As far as their perception of him, I mean, he's the king. He walks in, and it's just, you can feel it. I mean, if the force was real, you would feel the force powering into the room when he enters.
And pro wrestlers, including NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick Aldis, also known as Magnus, talking about the challenges facing Ronda Rousey as she transitions from MMA to WWE.
Think about, like, the press conference and stuff like that. They just, someone tells them, like, all right, now it's your turn, go out there, right? I'm sure if you ask Ronda, she'd probably say, this moment is the result of hundreds of people's work, meticulous preparation and planning and timing and everything, and now suddenly it's like, go, and that can be very overwhelming.
Just search Wade Keller on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Now, with Cody, I'm in the same boat. I've been a big fan of his. I think, like you said, the whole is more than the sum of the parts. And I think that brings a lot to the matches he's in. What about a person like, you said you're new to it, but, you know, not, you know, like you said, you didn't just discover this thing. Like, Kota Ibushi is the epitome of a wrestler that wrestles for the sake of wrestling. What have you thought of him and you're watching? And have you looked in some of his other more off-the-wall stuff in DDT, et cetera?
I haven't done too much of a deep dive into a lot of his past history of matches, but I do really enjoy what he's done recently. I think the thing that he's got going on with the Golden Lovers with Kenny is really good. And he's just – he is a guy, you know, even going back to, like, the WWE and the Cruiserweight Classic, I mean, you look at him, and it's kind of like a good – you know, a well-polished musician compared to, like, an up-and-coming, you know, indie musician, from the notion of he's just so polished. Like, there's a clear differentiation between him and most of his opponents in the ring because of how crisp, because of how smooth, because of how he can pace himself within matches and really hit his strides at the right time and use his facial expressions at the right time. Like, he just in the ring is on just a completely different level than most opponents he steps in there with. Sometimes I worry for his well-being because he's such a madman in there, but it all goes back to, you know, satisfying his art in the ring. And he's just such a smooth performer that he's really, really fun to watch. Cause when you watch him, you know, you're watching greatness in the business right now.
What would you say is, the thing you look at, like we've mentioned the WWE, we mentioned New Japan, we've talked about All In. What do you think in a match, what is the thing you're looking for that says, hey, I feel like these guys really, or these ladies really want to do this, and you can tell they're enjoying themselves in a match.
Honestly, man, what I look to, and what some of my favorite, memories and some of my favorite moments in the wrestling business is the crowd. Like, I look at the crowd reactions and I look to see, hey, do these guys have the audience right now? Do they have them in the palm of their hands? Are they reacting the way they want them to? Or maybe not the way they necessarily mapped it out, but are they reacting? And if they're, and if you read the column that I do on pwtorch.com, I regularly tie, the audience and the wrestlers together, because together they really are producing the art simultaneously. Like, the action in the ring is influencing the crowd, and then in the reverse, the crowd is then affecting what's going on in the ring. They really play off each other well. So when I can sit there and watch a match or watch a promo and really look at the audience and see them reacting, I know good work is happening on the highest of high levels, because that's how the business is supposed to go. So whether it's, I'm not a huge fan of the "This is awesome" chant because it's overused, but I think there's passionate versions of that where the crowd just is watching the action and just doesn't know what else to do but stand up and give, an applause to the match. Like, to me, like, that is where these guys are clicking on all levels and on all cylinders. So that's, and even like big moments, like I look to, back in the Attitude Era, for example, when I believe it was when Mick Foley won the WWE title for the first time, and you just have that entire match building and building and building, the crowd super into it, and then bang, right at the end, Stone Cold's music hits, and it's one of the biggest pops ever. I watch it to this day because it makes me smile, because that is a culmination of great work on all sides, influencing and creating a really, really special moment. So that kind of thing is what resonates with me.
As you're saying that, I think about the little moments that are frozen in my head. And recently, one kind of has been frozen in infamy, the first women's Money in the Bank match, where at the end, bear with me, Delta being you have James Ellsworth drop the title. Like, the image of it is just, at one point I'm both incensed and amazed, because the timing of dropping the belt from the hook to Carmella catching, or the briefcase from the hook to Carmella catching it, it was just the visual was perfect. Right. And then on top,
sure,
and then in the second, as soon as you realize what just happened, you're like, oh my, this piece of, like, and then some of it's like, oh God, I can't believe they really thought that the first women's Money in the Bank winner should be held by man. But then you're also, for me personally, I was like, that was just a really dirty but cool moment. And so I get you. And then in terms of matches, I'm always a sucker for the mirror spot. Whenever guys are doing like counter move, and then they just look at each other and the fans start clapping. Like, that stuff always is fun, because you can tell they're having, I just started watching Best of the Super Juniors while I was with my folks. And there were a couple of spots I saw with Flip Gordon when he was doing the same thing. And I'd never seen it the way he did his before, where he was basically doing a half nip up. And so he kept staying at that motion while the other person tried to grab him. And it was just, one, the physicality and the flexibility and the core strength to do it. And two, you can tell, like, they thought, how am I going to do this where someone hasn't seen it before? And I always appreciate that.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point. I love those spots too. And I also am a sucker for the spots where, the guys are maybe 15, 20 minutes into the match, staggering in the middle of the ring, and then they just exchange, like, strikes and kicks, like, right in the middle as the crowd, gets louder and louder and louder. A lot like Shinsuke Nakamura and Sami Zayn back at NXT TakeOver. They had this great match, and then it kind of boils to the point where they're both just in the ring, and they have nothing left to do but just try to beat each other up, and I love those moments, too, when done right.
Yeah. I'm looking around here in the airport. I'm looking, they have the Wright brothers and these different photos of like flying and history. And I'm just imagining if they did this with pro wrestling and you had different artists render key moments in history, like someone wrote into Wade during this Ask of the Editor and mentioned that Nakamura and AJ should have a Balls Count Anywhere match. And I laughed really harder than I should have last night when I heard this, but I want to bring those two up because it's a good example of a match that people lauded in New Japan for this, for their creativity, for their beauty of it. And then in WWE, they've had now almost four matches on television and it just hasn't reached the same height. Do you think it's like, what do you think about the idea of, when a guy comes to the WWE, they kind of give themselves that limiter, that governor, if you're a little golf cart, to make sure you don't go over the limit because you don't want to get in trouble. But where do you find the balance? And where do you think – who's your favorite wrestler within the WWE that you think has found the balance of artistry and telling a story and also making sure they don't show up their, you know, coworkers and get in trouble in the back?
I mean, as far as like the Shinsuke Nakamura, AJ Styles stuff goes, like, you know, it was always going to be hard for them to meet the expectations of the match that they did in the Tokyo Dome and Wrestle Kingdom. I mean, that was such a beautiful match and the build to it was tremendous. And honestly, like the companies are so different that it's hard to even like compare a match over there and what, you know, even like their best match here could be. It's really hard to compare those two pieces because you got to look at the context, and context is a little bit different with WWE and New Japan. But as far as like being somebody who doesn't kind of overstep his bounds coming into WWE, I mean, AJ Styles, on speaking of him, is to me a guy who's really perfected walking that fine line, because he's able to be himself. He did what he had to do from an athletic standpoint in the ring to get himself over huge. I think he's a reliable guy, but I don't think he goes out of his way to make himself look good and heads above the rest like he is at the expense of his opponents. I think he has prided himself on the fact that he can work a lot of different people, from your, you know, Dean Ambrose to Jinder Mahal to Nakamura, John Cena. I mean, like, he's worked them all and made them all look good in the process. So he is exhibit A in terms of coming into the WWE, adapting to their system and their style, while also maintaining what it was that brought him to the dance. And for him, that was his in-ring ability. I mean, he tells some great stories. He's great physically in the ring. He can sell his ass off. Like, he's just like your key example of how to make your mark in WWE the right way. I don't think he overdid it too soon. I mean, if you remember, he had his first feud was just, you know, a mid-card feud with Chris Jericho. From there, he got, you know, jobbed to Roman Reigns a couple times in a row. And, you know, he didn't let that bother him. He just went in, he kept up with his business, had great matches with everybody, and eventually the cream rise to the top. And if it's me and I'm outside the WWE and it's a goal to get there someday, he's a guy that I look at to say, okay, like, that's how you enter that company the right way.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling Media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
And for me, I would agree wholeheartedly. And another person I would bring up that kind of is coming into his own again is Seth Rollins. I mean,
yeah, bingo.
His last 8 months have been insane in terms of like what he's bringing to the table, how he's doing it, and the level of professionalism, he's kind of like taken the ball, like with the Intercontinental title, doing the challenge and turned himself basically into the de facto top champ of their show because Brock isn't there as much. And I guess I love watching his matches. I love his demeanor. And he just wants it. And, you know, I know a lot has been said about Roman, but I feel like Seth is that 1B, 1C, whatever they can legally put him at without embarrassing themselves for even declaring he's not, you know, that guy. What do you think of Seth Rollins? And do you think in the future you have much more to see from him, or is this kind of what you get?
Oh, man, no, I agree wholeheartedly with you on that. He's on a run right now that it kind of, in my mind, it mirrors like Shawn Michaels, you know, 1997, where he just was just on an incredible roll of just awesome matches with pretty much everybody. And yeah, when I look at him and I watch him perform in the ring or even just cutting a promo, like you can see that kind of confidence in his eyes. You can see that he knows how, you know, that he's really in a great spot. He knows the momentum that he has behind him. And he uses that to his advantage. And that's part of the art of this business as well. It's kind of knowing where you're at and being able to utilize those feelings and those emotions to get the audience to react the way that you want them to. And Seth right now, whether it's a promo or whether it's a match, he is able to do that very, very well. And at some point, the WWE is going to want to look his direction because the bigger he gets, the more money they may be leaving on the table by not going with him right now at his peak.
And that brings up a good question, too. We've talked about a lot of how a corporation can provide the art, but how much is too much when it comes to focusing primarily on the art at the expense of telling a story? 2 weeks ago when I was speaking to Innocent Isaiah Santero, he talked about the work he took in looking in cartoons, acting, improv, to create who he wanted to have as a wrestler in the ring. What about the person that just says, you know, I just saw WWE signed one of the highest level gymnasts they've ever, you know, that has been in the company. I can't remember his name right now, but he's the boyfriend of Simone Biles, who won 4 gold medals as a gymnast herself. And he's been able to, in his tryout, do basically everything Ricochet can do, as an example, just out of the gate with his gymnastic abilities. So if that person just came out of the box, as is, no psychology, no knowledge, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Indifferent? What do you think?
No, I think it's a bad thing. I really do. I mean, like a lot of, you know, the art of this business is not just moves in the ring. It's the why behind those moves. Like, why are they happening? It's great that Ricochet can do, you know, 3 backflips and a, you know, a corkscrew splash off the top rope or what have you. But if there's no reason behind it, then why does the audience care that he can do that? You know, there's a lot of people out there that can do those type of flips, but it has to be rooted in a good story for it to make sense and for it to all blend together. I mean, look, there's always going to be workers in the business that are, you know, kind of in ring first, and there's nothing wrong with that. But the more one-dimensional you are as a performer, if you just say, hey, no, I'm this, I'm the top rope move guy, well, you know, you're leaving a lot on the table that the business has to offer. And pro wrestling works when everything is clicking together, where the story is so detailed and told so well that it can turn around and make the match that much better. And if you have kind of a story that's maybe a little bit weaker, you know, good in-ring work can enhance that story. So they work in tandem. And I think you have to have elements of psychology. You have to have elements of story within the technical art in the ring to truly make a good product.
And looking at the Best of Super Juniors, I see a lot of, you know, it's going to be a 2 blocks and a round robin of just awesomeness. And yeah. So to your point, like you're going to have some matches where it's just a match because the tournament said the match had to happen.
Right.
But there's also going to be stories created from that. So how do you feel about like that chicken egg conundrum? Do you think a story has to be determined before the match, or can the match itself create a story, or both?
Both. Yeah, definitely both. I mean, they can, these things can grow from anywhere and be kind of spawned at any time. And I think tournaments are a useful tool in that regard, because it, you know, there's automatically a foundational story throughout the entire thing that all these guys are going for the opportunity to win this tournament. I mean, that is a story right there. I mean, there's not a lot of layers to it, but it is there, and it gives everybody a reason to be wrestling each other. And then from there, depending on how the matches go and how the tournament shakes out, like, you're going to have stories that build off of that foundational one. So that's to me, what you just pointed out, I mean, that's a great example of these things happening simultaneously. And then, you know, when the Super Juniors tournament is over, you know, we'll be able to look back and go, man, that was really good. And it started from a bunch of names on a piece of paper, but it turned into something so much bigger because the work in the ring, the stories that came out of it, the chance for opportunity at winning this tournament all collided together to tell some very intriguing stories. So absolutely both, hands down.
Awesome. And one of the last things I wanted to ask you about before we get out of here is, we talked about WWE, we talked about New Japan. I want to talk about artists in general. Who's your favorite wrestler? Like, if you're in the mood to watch a match, who's the person you want to put a match on regardless of promotion, and you know, or maybe what match is it that gets you to say, hey, this is cool, let me watch this. I got 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever. And I know this will be time well spent.
Yeah, man, for me, I throw on Steve Austin matches. I mm-hmm. love watching Stone Cold matches. And a lot of it is kind of rooted in what I was talking to you about before, and like just the reaction that guy got in any match against really any opponent. I mean, he was just on such a high level with how he connected with the crowd that he was able to do anything in that ring, and it worked. And the intensity that was in his matches, the stiffness of them, it all felt so real to me. And it felt real to me back in the day, and even still, you know, watching it today, when I throw on, you know, WrestleMania 17 to watch him and The Rock and the down in Houston, like, there's such a realness to that, and all his matches resonate in that way with me. And I think personally it's because of that crowd, because of how that crowd influenced what was able to happen in that ring. And I could watch his matches all day. I think they're just wonderful pieces of work.
And my final question to you, Zach, tonight is, you mentioned the crowd. I wanted to close with that. What crowds have been, in your experience, the best for watching a match at? Like, it could be, so for this, you could think about a location, you could think about an event. So which ones stand out to you? I know personally for me, the New York crowd, when John Cena came back from his neck injury at the Rumble, that crowd just helped that moment, because it was the first time in a while where it wasn't, let's go Cena sucks. It was all, yeah, you're my guy.
Yeah.
Welcome back. It's awesome. I can think of the Triple H return after they played U2's Beautiful Day, and
yes,
even using that song to kind of like remind you how much he sacrificed to get back. And But the floor is yours.
Yeah. Oh man, that's a fun question, and I agree with both of what you just said. But I'm gonna say two others that stick out in my mind. The first one, you know, I'm from Chicago, was in the building that day. But Punk at Money in the Bank, when he was taking on John Cena, and with him leaving the company on the line, like, that crowd reaction, I mean, very much so influenced the direction of CM Punk's career after that moment. I mean, it was loud, it was impassioned, like it's what you want in a wrestling match. And the fact that, like, I mean, that was right time, right place, right everything. All the stars aligned perfectly for that moment to happen. But I thought the audience did their part and drove that story, because the reaction was so incredible. So that definitely sticks out in my mind. And then the other one is Hogan Rock at WrestleMania 18. Like, that's still to me one of the greatest crowd reactions of all time. And not only was the reaction itself great, but Hogan and Rock's reaction to that reaction was also just so spot on in terms of how they milked it and how they used it to their advantage to make a match that, like, if you turned off the commentary and you turned off the sound, like, that match is a pretty, you know, standard A to B match. There's not much to it, but everything else that was going on around it, in terms of the audience, in terms of how the performers acted towards them and how they, you know, soaked in the audience's reaction, like, that made that match. And to this day, still one of the best crowd reactions of all time in the business. Really, really great.
Awesome. Well, Zach, thank you so much, first of all, for your time and also for your patience as this airport decides to make all the noise at once. Before we get out of here, why don't you tell the folks where they can see you on the Torch, how they can find you on social media, and any other platforms you'd like them to see you.
Oh, yeah. I really appreciate it, Rich. And again, thanks so much for having me. I really enjoy the show every week, so really glad to be on to chat with you. But yeah, guys, follow me on Twitter at Z Hedorn. That's at Z H E Y D O R N. You know, 99% pro wrestling related. And as far as my Torch stuff goes, you know, pwtorch.com. Monday nights for Raw, Tuesday nights for 205 Live, and then check it out over the weekend and every day in between, really, for the Artistry of Wrestling column that'll drop today or tomorrow this week. The topic is going to be the Melibration that Carmella executed on Tuesday night. I thought it was a pretty decent stepping stone for her and wanted to dive into some of the art behind that. So that'll drop later today or tomorrow. So just keep it locked to pwtorch.com.
Excellent. So, guys, for Zach, this is Rich signing off, as always. Dive into something new. Challenge yourself. Put yourself into a position where you can go beyond where you think. And in the meantime, I will dive with you later.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.